This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Sarah, or Shiraz as it's often known, I like to think of it as a boxer. It's got a balanced structure with firm acidity, a punchy peppery note in cooler climates, but it also, in warmer climates, can be a huge, powerful beast. In France, we call it Sarah, and often, when it's made in cooler sites around the world, we often describe it as Sarah. In Australia, it's known as Shiraz, and here the extra alcohol and a little bit less acidity gives the wine a bigger body, and quite often when you're making wines in warmer climates outside of Australia, you might call it Shiraz as well. There's no real rule about which one to use. It just depends on the producer what they call the grape variety. The grape itself is actually quite small with thick skins. Now, a small grape variety with thick skins means that your juice to skin ratio is very low. So you're going to be able to really easily extract lots of colour, lots of tannins and lots of flavours from all of that skin mass. It's very easy for Sarah to make deep, coloured, tannic wines. But it's a grape variety that can also produce lots of high-yielding, inexpensive wines that taste pretty good. Other red grape varieties that have a reputation for making inexpensive wines are things like Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Grenache. The style that you get from Sarah is often dependent on the climate. The climate range it likes is moderate to hot, and in a moderate climate, even there it struggles to ripen. For example, if you're in Burgundy, which is also a moderate climate, it would be too cold. But as you get to the sort of the bottom end of the moderate climate range in Northern Rhône in France, it starts to be able to ripen consistently enough to be grown there. So on the warmer parts of a moderate climate, it's fine. In these more moderate climates, it produces medium-bodied, high tannins and deep colour, often with a black peppery note and black fruits. Me personally, I often describe it with blackberry, which blackberry can be quite a floral type of smell. So floral, black fruits, very, very common aromas, along with black pepper from the more moderate sites. Warm and hot sites often create full-bodied, high alcohol, high tannin, deep-coloured, ripe black fruits and licorice-flavoured Sarah / Shiraz. Now, if you've got decent levels of tannins and fruit concentration, Sarahs from moderate to warm climates will often age, if they're good quality ones, and they often develop these sort of meaty, leathery aromas as well. When it comes to winemaking, warm and hot climate Sarahs designed to age will often undergo vigorous extractions, tannins and colour. So they're doing lots of cap work to extract all those tannins and colours and flavours. These big wines can often take quite a bit of oak and often have a high proportion of new oak that they're aged in. A more restrained style from these warm and hot climates, often seen in the more commercial, cheaper end of the scale, might start with an earlier picking harvest, which gives you lower alcohols and higher acidity, a more gentle cap management, giving a lot less extraction as well. Sometimes, to make the wines taste even smoother, they may add some whole bunches in with the crushed fruit. So that's whole bunches with crushed fruit. And then that will do a limited form of carbonic maceration. And as they slowly punch down, breaking up those whole bunches during the fermentation, the wines will often have a silkier texture and fresher, brighter fruit. So this whole bunches with crushed fruit is a type of carbonic maceration. We've done a whole spotlight on that in the past, so do listen to that if you want to know more about it, but it does produce these silkier textures and brighter fruit. After fermentation, if you're making one of these more easily accessible styles of Sarah, you'll often do an extended post-fermentation maceration, and that'll help do a little bit more extraction and also smooth out those tannins. Some producers, after the wine's been pressed, may put the wine into older barrels and sometimes even quite large barrels, 300, 500 litres as well, to give a very slow maturation, again, softening out the tannins and producing a much more restrained version of Sarah. So you can make Sarah in a big gutsy style, in a peppery style, and in a more commercially smoother, easier drinking style. So where is it grown? When we think of Syrah, I often think of France. As you move from north to south on the east side of France, that's the side that's got Alsace and Burgundy. In fact, it's almost a continuation. As you come down from Burgundy into Mâcon, into Beaujolais, the Rhône River comes in from Switzerland. And as it comes down between two big sets of mountains, you've got the Central Massif on the west side, and you've got the Alps on the east side. And the Rhône River comes down, carving a gorge between these two big mountain ranges. The result is a lot of steep, south-facing slopes, which are absolutely perfect for growing Syrah. Syrah in the northern Rhône is at its cool limit, so you really do need good sites and things like south-facing slopes and the river, which gives you reflected light, and also a little bit of river can extend your growing season a little bit. The other thing that comes down that gorge, apart from the Rhône River, is a very brutal wind known as the Mistral. And the Mistral rips through northern Rhône. And one of the advantages of being south-facing in the northern Rhône is that the wind comes from the north. It comes over the brow of the hill, and the grapes are protected by the hill being south-facing. So being south-facing is really, really useful in northern Rhône. It helps the ripening process and protects you from that very brutal Mistral wind. In the northern Rhône, Syrah is quite often historically co-fermented with other white grape varieties. Now, co-fermenting is where you get two grape varieties, you put them together in your fermentation tank, and they ferment at the same time together. The idea is, by doing a co-fermentation, you can help stabilize the color extraction, and often you can add some aromatic intensity to the wines. The grape varieties used for co-fermentation in Northern Rhône are either Viognier, Marsanne, or Roussanne, and we'll talk about the subregions which use which ones in a minute. The resulting wines from the best sites are often deeply coloured with medium to high tannins, black pepper, remember black pepper from the cooler sites in Syrah, a floral blackberry type aroma, or definitely black fruits, and often a high proportion of new oak. And lesser wines may be aged in older oak or larger barrels just to help soften them out. Within Northern Rhône, though, there are a number of different subregions, and the wines that give the biggest, gutsiest Syrahs from Northern Rhône, starting at the north, is Côte Rôtie. It's the furthest north, and Côte Rôtie stands for roasted slopes. So south-facing slopes, protected from the Mistral, giving that nice aspect to get a little bit more heat in there. They're allowed up to 20% of Viognier in Côte Rôtie to do your co-fermentation. However, these days, I'd be surprised if 20% is ever in there. Normally 5%, 10% is pretty excessive these days. Probably the most famous and the biggest of the gutsy wines from the Northern Rhône is Hermitage. And that's sort of about three quarters of the way down the Rhône Valley. Hermitage is a single hill with lots of little sub-named areas within that hill. And here they often co-ferment them with Marsanne or Roussanne. Again, 15% is the maximum, but again, these wines typically have a lot less co-fermentation going on than that. Both Côte Rôtie and Hermitage are big, powerful, and very expensive wines. And they're quite highly regarded as well. Right at the very south is Cornas. And Cornas is the warmest area in Northern Rhône, and here only 100% Syrah is allowed. This area is sun-baked and produces big, powerful wines. People often describe them as being very similar to Hermitage, but sometimes they will use the word a little bit more agricultural, maybe not quite as refined as Hermitage. Other areas that grow Syrah in Northern Rhône is St. Joseph. And St. Joseph is this really long region that comes all the way from the north, Côte Rôtie, Condru, and is on the western side of the Rhône River. It's a very, very long region. It doesn't produce as much wine as you think because of the nature of the hilly area. Some of the areas are quite hilly and they produce these concentrated wines. Maybe not quite as high quality as Côte Rôtie or Hermitage, but still good, deep, powerful wines. But there are some flatter areas in St. Joseph. And when you get onto flatter areas, it gets easier to work the vineyards. So you can also do a little bit of mechanization as well, which means you can produce higher volumes of cheaper wines and be quite profitable at doing that. So St. Joseph has some of these big, gutsy wines, but it also has lighter wines that have had less extraction, lighter body, and maybe some of that carbonic maceration we mentioned earlier. The last important region in Northern Rhone is Gros Hermitage, and this is important from a volume point of view. Typically, it has a reputation for making lighter styles of Syrah on the flat plains where mechanization is good, and it's the largest producer by volume. However, in the northern part of Gros Hermitage and behind Hermitage itself, it gets quite hilly. And here, again, you're starting to get back into those concentrated Syrahs with a little bit more guts. If you buy yourself a Gros Hermitage, it's probably going to be one of the lighter, easier drinking styles of Syrah. Now, I've mentioned a lot about these steep slopes. And just to recap why steep slopes are quite good. Well, in climates where ripeness is marginal, you're worried that you may not ripen regularly, having your vineyard on an angle so it's facing the sun effectively gives it more energy from the sun's rays. The sun's rays hit it more square instead of being spread over a larger, flatter area. It's a bit like a torch. If you hold a torch straight down, it's like the sun's directly overhead, it's a small, tight, bright light. If you slowly twist the torch so that the torch's beam goes on a large area, you'll see that the brightness seems to get less and the area it covers is longer. If you could then tilt the paper up like you're on a hill, all of a sudden, intensity of the light becomes more intense again and you get more energy going into your vineyard. And that's what happens in Northern Rhone. If you can get your vineyard on a slope facing the relatively low-angled sun, then you're going to get a lot more energy and you're going to be a warmer vineyard and you're more likely to be more reliable ripening up your Syrah. So being on a south-facing slope, quite handy, particularly in Northern Rhone. The other thing, as I mentioned, is that Mistral. You've got to watch that Mistral. South-facing slopes are brilliant for protecting you from that Mistral. As you head further south out of Northern Rhone, what happens is that central massive mountains on the western side and the Alps on the eastern side sort of roll away. And as they roll away, they leave this big, flat, open area. And this is known as Southern Rhone. In the Southern Rhone, the grapes are often planted close to the ground. And they do that because there's a lot of stony soils in Southern Rhone. Being close to the ground means that at the end of the day, as the temperatures drop and normally you'd stop photosynthesizing, that extra heat from those stones that had heated up during the day radiates back, extending your growing season. And that helps give you a longer growing day, which helps ripen up your fruit a little bit more. But also being close to the ground protects you from that Mistral wind. And quite often in Southern Rhone, people have to put up all sorts of wind breaks to try and protect themselves from that vicious, vicious wind. One way of dealing with the wind is for Grenache, for example, they often grow it in a bush vine. And bush vines have the advantage there's no real stakes or wires to get blown around. But Syrah normally needs to be trellis. It's not really a vine that's suitable for being in a bush vine. So normally you need to sort of trellis Syrah up to help support it in the Southern Rhone. The reason I mentioned Grenache is because in the Southern Rhone, unlike the Northern Rhone, where Syrah is the only red grape variety, the Southern Rhone has a whole cornucopia of different grape varieties. The main three in Southern Rhone are Syrah, Mourvèdre, and Grenache. There are other grape varieties such as Carignan, Sanso, but we're going to focus just on Syrah, Mourvèdre, and Grenache. And Syrah and Mourvèdre are two grape varieties that give colour and tannins to wines, which is great because the other grape variety, Grenache, which is really, really common in Southern Rhone, lacks both colour and tannins. It provides alcohol and concentrated red fruits to the blend. Often you'll grow Syrah in the cooler sites in the Southern Rhone and Mourvèdre in the warmer sites. Mourvèdre is very marginal in Southern Rhone, so you only grow Mourvèdre in the warmer sites and you grow Syrah in the cooler sites. In the Southern Rhone, there's a number of regions. Probably the most famous is Châteauneuf-du-Pape. It's certainly the largest cru. A cru just means an appellation that's been named after a particular village. So in Northern Rhone, Hermitage is a cru, Côte-Rôtie is a cru. In Châteauneuf-du-Pape is a cru because the appellation is named after a single village. Châteauneuf-du-Pape is quite famous because A, it's the largest cru in the Southern Rhone. It also has these galets or pudding stones. And these are quite large, chunky stones which have come down through the Rhone Valley and been dumped and spread all over this old floodplain. Again, these big galets or stones radiate heat back, extending the growing day, increasing the ripeness of the fruit. There's lots of different soils in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and some of the wines can be very good. There's a lot of pretty dilute, pretty average Châteauneuf-du-Pape as well. Châteauneuf-du-Pape is a real classic. It's a mixture of Grenache, normally the main dominant grape variety, and then, as we said earlier, Serra and Mourvèdre are there to support them, giving colour and tannins. In fact, Châteauneuf-du-Pape allows for up to 13 different grape varieties, of which two or three of them are white grape varieties in the blend. But Grenache is the most dominant, and Serra and Mourvèdre back it up. There's a number of pretty good crus. They all produce red wines similar to Châteauneuf-du-Pape. They are Gigondas, Vacherais, and Lérac. And again, all these make Grenache, Serra, Mourvèdre. You'll often hear people use the term GSM for Grenache, Serra, Mourvèdre blends. From a volume point of view, the most important appellation is Côte de Rhône. And again, this is a Grenache, Serra, Mourvèdre blend. It comes in a number of different qualities. Bulk standard Côte de Rhône, made in a really high volume way. You'll probably see some form of carbonic maceration in there to make it soft and easy drinking. The next tier up is Côte de Rhône Village, which is hopefully a little bit more concentrated, probably a few more of the better quality grapes in the blend. And then finally, you'll see Côte de Rhône Village, and then the name of a specific village. And again, like most things in the wine region, normally the more specific the location, often the better the quality of the wines. As we head further south into southern France, here Serra is grown, mainly on the cooler sites though, because it is starting to get pretty warm down there, even for Serra. But Serra is an important grape variety in Southern Rhone, along with Grenache. You don't see Serra grown anywhere else in Europe, really. However, it's grown quite extensively in the New World, i.e. not Europe. And in the New World, you're going to be making it one of two styles. Either you're going to be doing it in that peppery style, and places like Chile's Alki Valley, New Zealand, Hawke's Bay, in Australia, the state of Victoria has Geelong and Heathcote, that make these peppery styles. And even in South Africa, where we think of South Africa as being quite warm, Walker Bay, which is reasonably cool, Elgin and Elm also produce peppery styles of Serra. And that pepperiness, I always think that pepperiness tells you a lot about the climate. In South Africa, Geelong, they all grow Pinot Noir and they also all make peppery Serra. So you know these areas are down the moderate end of the spectrum. And so you sort of know what to expect. When you see the word peppery, you know it's going to have a little bit more acidity, maybe not quite the alcohol, maybe not quite the tannin extraction, but they're going to be a little bit peppery. And you sort of got a fair idea of the style of wine being made. To be honest, though, we talked about Walker Bay and Elgin and Elm, which are all coastal areas, Cape South Coast. A lot of the Serra produced in South Africa is from hotter climates. Much warmer. And here, the wines are richer, more full-bodied, higher alcohols, and they may develop sort of earthy, meaty-type characteristics. In South Africa, you've got Robertson, which is part of the Breed River Valley. You've also got the hilly area of Paarl, north of Stellenbosch, which is an important site for Serra. And Swartland has a reputation for producing dry farm Serras. Now, dry farming is where you don't have any irrigation. Normally, in most of the New World, irrigation is important, particularly these dry areas are really, really important. But if you can get your grapes established without giving them much water, they learn to get their roots nice and deep and get access to reliable water. So they're actually quite good in hot climates. Swartland, it's one of the areas that really suffers in South Africa during drought. But dry farmed Serra, where there's no irrigation, means that you often get lower yields, but much more concentration in your flavours as well. So Swartland has a reputation for dry farmed Serra, also has a bit of a reputation for dry farmed Chenin Blanc, which I kind of like. The main place outside of France for Serra, and probably even more important than France for Serra, is Australia, particularly in terms of volume. Shiraz, as the Aussies call it, is grown in most regions. I mentioned you've got Cooler, Geelong and Heathcote in Victoria, Australia, are well known for their peppery Serra. The two warmest areas for the production of Shiraz is Hunter Valley in New South Wales and Barossa in South Australia. Both are hot and they provide these really full-bodied, intensively fruity Shirazes, earthy, spicy, and again, that leathery note with age. One area that produces some of my favourite wines is McLaren Vale. Big fan of Jeff Merrill's Grenache Serra Mourvèdre. And in McLaren Vale, there's a lot of old vine Shiraz, which gives depth and complexity to the wines. It is grown all over the place, right from Western Australia. One region that's a little bit surprising is Clare Valley. Clare Valley is known for its Rieslings with those petrol lime aromas coming through, but it also produces fragrant, powerful and structured Shiraz as well. Okay, that ends our look at Shiraz.